Well, we are so glad that you come to listen and talk. I talk back to the radio all the time, or the television, too. Welcome in to a Wednesday, a wet Wednesday edition of Focus. We're here with you from noon till 2, and we're glad you're here with us. If you can't be, you can come back at any time to podcast us at WJR.com because, well, we're also streaming at all times, and I do hope you have the free WJR app and Facebook and YouTube pages, live video streaming, except I can't get on that right now, and I don't know why my computer. Well, I know why. It's my computer, and it's me.
Is that computer maybe not hooked up to the internet?
No, it's I'm getting everything that I'm supposed to get. I don't. Let me look. No, it's up. It's the known network. It's all here. Nothing's different. I don't know what has happened. These are always the most confounding situations when everything looks exactly the same. Let me just see if it's going to give me any. No, it gives me my topic pulse. It gives me all the ads I don't want to receive. I get them all.
Huh.
But when I go to Mike Parsons' StreamYard link, oh, now it's there.
All right.
Man, oh, man. You know, this is so annoying.
You know what it is? It's like anytime there's something broken in the studio, as soon as our engineer comes in, nothing's wrong.
Right. And what that happens when you take your car to get, you know.
Yeah,
you say,
to the mechanic.
The blinker's not working, and the mechanic sits down, hits the blinker, and it works, and you look like an idiot. It's not as bad as when you come and when they say the refrigerator stopped working and then the guy comes and just plugs it back in.
Right.
That's the worst. But
well,
anyway,
now
it's working.
Yes, you're here now. So all is right.
So it's Mike Parsons, our executive producer. If you ever wanted to see what he looks like, now you can because it's streaming. YouTube pages, Facebook and YouTube pages, live video streaming. You'll also see Abby Pelkey, where Danielle Mason usually sits. Professor Mason is still helping Abby Pelkey, proud U of M grad, I might add, and Rich Luzinski, our WJR traffic and weather first right here for you. He'll keep a good eye on it. Well, here's one it's, you know, these lessons that I try to teach are so, they're just getting easier and easier as we go along. For example, you probably don't know because it's not front page news like the reverse was in the last several days. But did you know, because I didn't, that oil prices have plunged by the most they have in 4 years?
I know they've gone down significantly.
Yeah, they've plunged the most they have in 4 years. So why is that not a big headline story in all the major news outlets and everywhere else? Why would that be? Why would that be? Because it doesn't play into the narrative that is currently out there for the mainstream, or as we like to say, lamestream media that just doesn't want to find anything good about what Trump does. Look, there's plenty that Trump does that isn't good, but there's plenty that is good, and you got to be fair and see both. Now, one of the things that's crazy, if I may say so. May I say so, Mike?
I'll allow it.
Thank you. The president never should have said, oh, well, I can't do an imitation of him. We don't have time anyway. But he never should have said, if they touch one ship in the Straits of Hormuz, then they will hit like they've never been hit ever in their lives. Well, three or four ships have been hit.
Right. It's like Obama's red line in Syria. Once you draw that red line, you better be able to back it up.
You can't draw red lines that you're not going to live up to or you're in big trouble. So we already have had ships hit. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. So whatever. I haven't read this yet, but the Detroit News, the opinion page written by Michael Wrights of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. They don't always make the right decisions, but that's another story. The headline, Trump, Whitmer, and the Problem of Emergency Powers. To have a picture of Governor Whitmer and President Donald Trump side by side, like sharing a problem together, that's That's pretty amazing in itself. Meanwhile, speaking of the president and the governor, Governor Whitmer was able to go to Trump and get him to okay the ice storm aid that FEMA, everybody loves FEMA, FEMA turned down. FEMA turned down the aid, and somehow or another, Governor Whitmer was able to weasel it out of Donald Trump. And I got a sidebar thing, story that on my desk, I can't find it because it's my desk, but there's a story about President Trump is helping block invasive Asian carp from reaching the Great Lakes. I don't know if you saw that sidebar story. I saw
his post about it, and he's pretty fired up about blocking Asian carp.
Did he say anything like, just one Asian carp comes into the Great Lakes, and they will see hooks and spears like never before?
We will hit the Asian carp unlike anything you've ever seen.
Okay. So, you know, the best way to handle Asian carp is change the name of it and make it a delicacy on menus.
Right.
Man, we'll fish them out of existence. We almost did with sea bass.
Let's get Joe Vicari on the phone and get it on the menu.
Joe knows what to do with fish. Nobody does fish better than Joe and Vicari and
your
Joe
country,
Muirs.
Your country and the Great Lakes need you.
Here's a sad story. And I remember being with him at the big cigar event that Rod Elbert used to throw at the auto show. Tommy Hearns.
The hitman.
And he seemed fine, but there's a story in today's Detroit News, the award-winning Detroit News, that boxing legend Tommy Hearns is now under guardianship and conservatorship.
Oh, no.
Which means somebody at least believes he's kind of lost it. And it shouldn't be a surprise after being hit in the head a number of times. This happens to boxers, football players, and yet we still have the sports. But
right.
Be that as it may, apparently there's a family fight now over Tommy Hearns. And some part of the family is saying they're being kept away from him. Man, oh, man.
Right. And I'm sure.
Add family, add money.
Yes.
You got problems.
I was
going
to say, I'm sure it boils down to somebody either trying to keep or get money.
Yeah, sadly. That appears to be exactly what it is. We were on this before anybody else, and we were lucky enough to have one of the greatest guys in this area, Dr. Sumit Singla from Henry Ford Health, on a front page story in today's Detroit News. Michigan hospitals tackle baffling rise in colorectal cancer. We were on that story a long while ago.
Oh, yeah.
And how it's also affecting younger and younger people. So I'm happy to see that this story, the cancer clinic at Corwell Health, is doing a good job, too, in recruiting colorectal surgeons. But I got to tell you, we were on top of that with the great Dr. Sumit Singla at Henry Ford Health a long while ago. And you know what? We'll get into some of the warning signs because we've mentioned, but you can't mention them too often. I believe, well, let me do it right now while we're thinking of it. I think, sadly, the first note on warning signs is there is no warning sign. I mean, you don't know that you have it, which
right.
is why you have to go in and get tested. But
right.
Colonoscopies, I think I'm doing another one.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
take my microphone. No, I'm not.
Well, just host the show from the table.
Yeah, what a great idea.
Yeah.
And then I have to say things look smaller than they actually appear.
Objects in the mirror.
Objects in the mirror appear small. I got to defend myself. Anyway, symptoms of colon cancer can include a change in bowel habits, such as more frequent diarrhea or constipation, rectal bleeding or blood in the stool, ongoing discomfort in the belly area, such as cramps, gas, or pain, a feeling that the bowel doesn't empty all the way during a bowel movement, weakness or tiredness, and losing weight without trying. I've got all of that. Okay, so anyway, that's why I'm going back in for my colonoscopy.
Good.
It'll be, I don't know, they should give you a little something, so I don't know how many I've had. I've had a few.
Like a discount card, you get 5 colonoscopies,
get,
you get the
you
6
know,
free?
Get a card, they punch it, and after the 5th one, you get it free.
Right.
I'm not holding my breath on that anyway. All right, we're underway. We've got a lot going on. Let me check with Abby Pelkey. Abby, are you feeling more comfortable? I see the sign is not covering your face now, which is good.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Danielle is getting bored back there.
Well, she's used to working her behind off, and now she's kind of taking it easy. And in her professorial way, she's just helping you learn the board, and that's a good thing.
I told her I could start making some problems for her if she wanted to jump in and put some fires out, but she said no.
Oh, well, I'm glad you offered. That's very nice. But I'm glad she said no. And did you ever think you'd be talking on the radio so quickly?
No, can't say so. I know. Okay. I did the Sunday show with Mark Hollis a couple of times, and I told him no. So,
you what?
I told Mark no. Don't put me on the air.
Oh well, you didn't. You forgot to tell me that. So I don't want people to think you said no, and I said
no,
I don't care.
You did not. Don't worry.
No, good. All right. Well, anyway, we are underway, and we've got a lot going on this gloopy, wet Wednesday. We'll make it through. But spring is closer than ever. But so are seemingly ridiculous tornadoes. I mean, what the heck is going on? Somebody said El Nino. Possibility of a super El Nino. Nino. I guess there's a Nina and a Nino. I don't pay too close
attention. One's a boy, one's a girl.
Yeah. Well, the El Nino must be the girl.
Nino. No, O is masculine. A is feminine. So Nino
oh, see,
is boy.
See how well I did in language skills. All right. So possibly the possibility of a super El Nino threatens extreme weather. That's all we needed to hear. Okay. That's it. We've got lots more going on. And Nolan Finley, who just celebrated his 50th birthday, and I called and sang happy birthday to him again because I did it 10 days early by mistake. And then also it was his 50th anniversary on his birthday at the Detroit News. So we got lots to talk with him about, and very little of it has to do with his birthday or his anniversary, but we'll note it because it's notable news as we continue in Focus at 12:16. All righty. Our good friend Nolan Findlay, editorial page editor of the Detroit News, co-author of the Civility book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide, by Nolan Findlay and his friend Stephen Henderson, along with Lynn Golodner. Yesterday, we noted it was I almost said the 50th birthday, but it's the 50th anniversary of Nolan Findlay at the Detroit News, and it was his birthday, but I didn't ask what number it was. But Nolan, again, happy birthday and happy anniversary.
Well, thanks, Paul. You can do the math and understand it's got to be a pretty big number.
I'd say it's a good number, Nolan. And it certainly
is a good number.
It certainly beats the alternative, doesn't it, my friend?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's a good time of life.
It was interesting to see in our Detroit News today a picture on the opinion section. I don't have it now. I had it here a minute ago of President Trump and Governor Whitmer side by side. And somebody was writing an op-ed piece pretty much. I think they were criticizing both of them for the same problem. And I bet neither one of them ever expected to be together in any boat.
No. And, you know, one of the things you've got to give credit to Gretchen Whitmer for is that she understands how to get to Donald Trump. I mean, she understood that back when she was needling him, and she certainly understands it now that she's trying to charm him. He is a man who is very, very susceptible to flattery. And I said when he was elected in the first time in his early days, that if Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer worked at it, they could co-opt this president simply by flattering him and you know, praising him and kissing his butt. They chose a different direction and, you know, went to war with him. But I don't believe that Donald Trump is a man of any firm principles. I think he's easily swayed, easily manipulated and co-opted.
Well, and a good example is, you know, everyone's screaming, well, FEMA was decimated. FEMA was destroyed. Well, FEMA wasn't doing their job. They turned down the governor for FEMA aid during that ice storm. And the president has now stepped up and said, no, I'm going to help you with that. And he also has made some pledges to fight the invasive Asian carp in the Great Lakes.
And help with the tornadoes out west that we in Michigan we experienced last week. So, I mean, you can work with this president if you understand how he operates. and what moves him. And she apparently does.
Well, it's not a secret.
No,
I mean, it isn't. You pointed it out a long time ago. We've talked about it a long time ago, and we see it every time he has a cabinet meeting or any other meeting, because every person who speaks has to first say how great it is and how they couldn't have done anything without President Trump. We understand. We appreciate that. We understand.
Yeah, that's right. In this administration, wherever, whenever a member is in public, it always starts with, and here's another great thing Donald Trump is doing. So, I mean, it's not easy for a lot of people to do, but it's effective. And again, give Gretchen Whitmer credit for working it.
You know, our old friend Ingrid, I have her. Why do I act like I can find something on my desk? It's here. Trust me. Our old friend Ingrid, who's now back with the family with USA Today and the Detroit News. She just wrote a bit about the Save America Act, saying basically most of America is for IDs for voting, because we're used to giving IDs for all kinds of stuff, and yet the Democrats don't get that. And now President Trump says he won't sign any bills until the Save America Act passes. What do you think about that?
I think that would be a fine idea, no matter what, not to sign any more bills. Bills cost money. But the SAVE Act, I just got finished editing an editorial on that. It's common sense. As you said, most of America favors it. This is a ridiculous stand for the Democrats to take. Puts them out of the mainstream or keeps them out of the mainstream. How many times a week do you have to show your ID, Paul?
Oh.
I mean, over and over and over again.
Right.
And to think it's some extraordinary burden to come to the voting booth and have to show your ID. I mean, their argument that, it would keep some people from voting is absurd. And you have to question their motivations. Why do they oppose safeguards at the polling place? And, you know, the only conclusion you come up with is they don't care who votes as long as they vote Democrat.
Right. And I got to tell you something. I don't know if you've said it. I'll say it. It's racist for the Democrats to think or act like minorities aren't smart enough to know how to get a photo ID. That's racist in itself. And even the communist running New York, when he wanted people to come help and shovel snow, they had to have two pieces of ID in order to be able to do that. This is just so comical. It's not funny, but it is funny, if you know what I mean.
And, you know, Democrats are always on their stump about protecting democracy. There's no more necessary protections of democracy than to make sure only citizens vote. The voting process is both fair and secure. And this is where it's all started. If people start believing our elections are corrupt, we've lost faith in the government.
Well, God bless you. I'm so happy that you've been at the Detroit News for 50 years and a day, starting today, the day after your birthday. So always good to have you around, and we're lucky to have you. And I know that there were companies that tried to woo you away from Detroit, but you stayed, and we are so appreciative of that. Thank you, Nolan.
Thank you, Paul. Very kind of you.
Nolan Findlay, editorial page editor of the Detroit News, co-author of The Civility Book, A Guide to Building Bridges Across the Political Divide, by Nolan, his pal, Stephen Henderson, and Lynn Gollidner. So we continue at 12:30 on Focus with Paul W. Smith at WJR. Making it through the rain, these are kind of like the spring showers, a little early, but everything's been a little early, including the tornado activity. And here's hoping and praying that's not a sign of things to come. Meanwhile, we have war underway. call it whatever you want. But Peter Meyer, former congressman and Army veteran, is here to weigh in on the latest in Iran. Peter, it's always a pleasure. How do you think we're doing, based on your time as a congressman and what you've learned, and as an Army veteran in what you learned in that position? How are we doing?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on, Paul. And I will say one thing. When I was in the military, I also was in a unit that was supporting some planning for what, you know, what the Iranian response would be in just this type of a scenario. Now, granted, some of my understandings are maybe about a decade out of date. But this is an area where I've spent a significant amount of time, and where we are right now in terms of what we've been able to inflict and what has been inflicted upon us and our allies is, you know, what we've inflicted has been significantly more successful than I would have expected, you know, if we had this conversation trying to forecast out, you know, 2 weeks back. And then where, you know, what Iran has been able to do in terms of attacks, you know, it has certainly been more widespread than I would have expected. I'm surprised that they have launched ballistic missiles at countries that were allied with them and that had open and supportive relations. That to me has been a bit bewildering. But, you know, the fact that oil is still, you know, hovering, you know, at $90 a barrel, give or take, still 40% below the price that it had been, you know, in the immediate aftermath of Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. You know, the fact that this has not ground the world economy to a start yet, and yet the Iranian military has been decimated, you know, I would strongly agree with the president's comments that this has been overwhelmingly successful from a military standpoint. Now, the biggest question is going to become, you know, what happens on the political and diplomatic front? You know, does the regime capitulate? Do, you know, it, does this fall into the decapitate and delegate strategy like Venezuela? And that is what is very difficult to predict at the moment.
Well, because we can't control what the institutional media will do. And we know they want to get rid of Trump and show him in the poorest light they possibly can. Otherwise, they would have put on the front page today everywhere. And all of three networks would have been talking about it. And none of them have, that oil prices plunged by more than 11% Tuesday, yesterday, the steepest percentage drop of any session since 2022. And that's amazing, because they just, when it was reverse of that, they couldn't, it went up 50 cents this week. It's never gone up 50 cents. Well, because it was never that low before, where it had room to go up 50 cents. And by the way, it was still under what gas prices were when Joe Biden was president in 2022. So it's sad and it's astonishing that the average American person, if they just let the institutional media guide them, they're going to be misguided, sadly.
I could not agree more. Go ahead, sir.
Well, no, listen, if you want to agree with me, you can say it again. I love that. It's perfect. What did you say? I'm sorry, Peter, what did you say?
No, I was going to say, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that to me has been surprising is that whatever Donald Trump does, you know, whatever policies he's implementing, their approval is just going to be about the same as his approval. The approval rate for the war in Iran is the same as Donald Trump's approval rate writ large. The approval rate for the war in the incredible operation to arrest, you know, Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela has the same approval rating in the U.S. as Donald Trump has. Now, if you ask the Venezuelans, that operation is polling 40 points higher in Venezuela. 73%, 74% of Venezuelans agree and support and now think the country's heading in the right direction. And in the U.S., it's 40 points lower for the folks who are not even impacted by it.
Unbelievable. And that's based on the way the whole thing is being played. It's based on night after night after night of the supposedly late night entertainment shows that are not entertaining anymore, who their whole monologue is to attack the president and give out, by the way, incorrect, faulty information. Shame on Jimmy Kimmel and the others. But meanwhile, I am worried when the president says if they hit ships in the Strait of Hormuz, then there's going to be hellfire like they've never seen before. Well, they've hit a few ships, and he's going to find himself in the Obama situation where you draw a red line and then you don't do anything when they cross the red line. He's got to do something now. And now he's moved that threat to if they mine the area. But, I mean, they're already hitting ships.
And we're already bombing just about everything we can bomb. I mean, we have, you know, launched a tremendous amount of munitions on Iran. You know, their military capability has been severely weakened, which doesn't mean that they don't pose a threat, doesn't mean that they can't send Shahed drones, doesn't mean there aren't plenty of other, you know, things that the Iranians can do to escalate and continue to inflict damage on the U.S. and on our allies. But this, I guess I'm not super worried about Donald Trump drawing red lines because, you know, while there's plenty of areas where I wish he was more ideologically consistent and or, you know, follow through on things that he said or was more clear, when you're dealing with a negotiation, when you're dealing with a scenario that you have to be able to rapidly adapt to the scenario that you are facing, to changes that are occurring on the ground, to other, you know, external factors and variables that are weighing in, it is really helpful to not have to, you know, feel beholden to things that you said before, and to be able to discard that when the moment arises in order to strike the best deal at the best moment, you know, for your national interests.
Peter Meyer with us.
Not super concerned. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. That makes me feel better. Peter Meyer, former congressman, Army veteran here. Do you think that Iran miscalculated? Because, I mean, they're hundreds of years behind us in many ways. Did they miscalculate, and did they think by striking their what used to be friendly neighbors, it's going to anger the neighbors and that eventually that anger will be aimed at the United States for, quote unquote, causing this in the first place?
I think that was certainly their intent. And it may have been, you know, this is maybe a slightly generational reference, but a little bit of a Leroy Jenkins strategy. You know, you just become the wild card. You throw everything at the kitchen. You know, they throw the kitchen sink at the problem. You know, hope that if you don't see a way of controlling it, you might as well just make it more chaotic because you benefit from the chaos. And maybe something will rebound to your benefit. I do not think that's been the case so far. Yes, there's some frustrations in the Gulf over, you know, what this has inflicted to the economy of the region. But the Iranians have certainly done no favors to their relations with the Qataris, with the Omanis, with Azerbaijan. It's just insane, their approach. And if anything, it's helping to reorient, solidify opinions in the Middle East, and to also validate a lot of the fears and a lot of the threat that the U.S. was alleging Iran posed. They have full cloth confirmed that through the recklessness of their actions and attacks on not just uninvolved countries, but also civilian infrastructure throughout the region in a very just astonishing way.
Well put, Peter. It's one of the reasons we call upon you. You've got strong and I think pretty good opinions on all of these things based on your experience as a former congressman and Army veteran and a guy who supported some of the planning of the Iranian response many years ago. Peter Meyer, we thank you for your expertise and for joining us again. Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Paul.
Our pleasure indeed. Paul W. Smith in Focus at WJR at 1243. Well, you know, there's a lot going on in our world in sports, which is a wonderful thing to take our minds off everything else going on in the world. Not that we shouldn't pay attention. We should, and we do. But there's nothing wrong with thinking about other things and looking forward to seasons ahead of us in sports. Nick Lundberg, a proud MSU grad, is a WJR digital sports reporter. And he's here to fill us in on a few things going on here as the Lions restructured Jared Goff's contract and make a few moves in free agency. And in fact, we'll be hosting a Big Ten tournament pre-show this coming Friday night at 7 before the MSU game. So first of all, always nice to have you here, Nikki, but also congratulations on hosting that pregame show Friday. And I think you're going to be joined by Mr. Valentine, Justin Valentine from our WJR web department.
Yes, we've been having a lot of fun with that. And like you said earlier, sports is definitely a good way to kind of get your mind off of all the, you know, serious things going on. And that's kind of why I really do this. And I love what I do. So I'm always glad to talk to you, Paul.
Well, you do a great job, and you're a recent graduate of MSU, and folks that might be watching on Facebook and YouTube pages because of the live video streaming can see he's got his Michigan State Spartan hoodie on because he is such a good Spartans guy. I just want you to know, I have a Michigan shirt on.
Oh.
Under my sweater out of respect. Wait a minute. Okay. See that? Out of respect for our listeners, because they know I went to Michigan, but we are the voice of Michigan State, and we appreciate and love that. We've been the voice of both. So talk to me about what had to happen here to restructure Jared Goff's contract.
So there's a lot of moving pieces with the NFL free agency, especially in Detroit right now. Obviously, they've moved on from a number of different players that, you know, we've known to kind of, you know, learn about. Alex Anzalone, David Montgomery, a lot of mostly based on their contract situation. And now you get to Jared Goff, who's one of the highest paid players on the team. And there's still a lot of pieces that they need to fill. And there's a lot of money that still needs to kind of be, you know, circled back into other players to make sure that the team is, you know, makes the playoffs next year pretty much. So they basically cleared $32 million for this season in cap space so they can go find more free agents that will fit, you know, their playoff aspirations and their roster.
Nick, that doesn't mean Jared Goff necessarily lost that amount in pay.
No, a lot of it was converted into a signing bonus, and it's stretched out over, you know, the next couple of years or so. So he will still get his money at some point. It's just the way it's kind of used so that the team can kind of move, you know, their money that they have for this year and use it in other places and not just with Goff's contract for this specific season.
As it said, I guess, here in the newspaper, with Goff, the Lions converted $40 million of his base salary into a signing bonus, as you just explained, Nick, and added an extra void year, whatever that means, in 2030. And the restructure lowers Goff's cap hit from $69.6 million to $37.6 million in 2026, but increases his cap hit in future years. It is a bit complicated, isn't it? And a lot of this is guaranteed money, which didn't used to exist very much in football, but now it seems like it's in every contract. It's a difficult time for those of us on the outside because we liked David Montgomery and, you know, we liked following these people. So fill us in on some of the new signs that have been done, for example, to replace David and other things that are going on in the league of note. And I'm sure you're very concerned about the Chiefs signing the Super Bowl MVP and former MSU star Kenneth Walker III.
That is definitely a great signing for them. But for the Lions' perspective, you bring in Isaiah Pacheco, who's going to make a lot less than David Montgomery made last year. And, you know, Montgomery, I feel like, is, you know, the better player, but kind of for what the role he had with the team last year, bringing in a cheaper option who still, you know, did well with the Chiefs, obviously won two Super Bowls, was a big part of their offense for a while. You know, he can really step in and kind of fill Montgomery's shoes very well. And a lot of these moves, like, they chose not to re-sign Alex Anzalone and Amik Robertson. And these guys are fan favorites and, you know, culture locker room guys. Another one, Taylor Decker, they decided to release him. But like I said, a lot of this is just about making sure they have enough money to pay the guys that they believe in. And obviously some of these guys are getting older. Last year obviously showed that for a lot of those names I said, they didn't have their best seasons. And like I said, they're getting older. And for what they wanted, I just don't think I agree with Brad Holmes on a lot of what he's been doing is that these guys just aren't worth what they're getting paid right now. For what the team, you know, wants to do in the playoffs and how they want to pay their other guys, because you also have guys like Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta who still need to be paid. So there's still a lot of moving pieces. It's early in free agency, but I think even though they've been gotten rid of a lot of familiar names, that it's for the best and for the better for the team.
So do you agree with these caps? I mean, baseball doesn't have a cap, does it? I mean, they can pay people as much as they want to pay them, or am I wrong about that?
You're right for right now, but that's the whole argument going into next year is that they're not sure if they want to implement a salary floor or a salary cap because the owners and players have been going back and forth, and that we might not even have a season next year, but that's for a different topic in baseball.
That's the last thing we need to go through again. We don't need that, but you do wonder because you start to hear about what people are being paid. And I gave the story of Al Kaline turning down in 1970 $100,000 a year because he said he didn't play well enough to get that. 1971, they talked him into taking $100,000 a year, the first six-figure player for the Tigers at least. And then I mentioned that this many years later in our lifetime still, the Tigers just hired a guy. They're going to pay $105,000 a day, 365 days a year for 3 years. So the world has changed.
Yeah, I wonder how 400 million would sound to Al Kaline right now.
Oh, well, he's spinning right now, no doubt. Such a fine gentleman indeed. All right, a couple of questions. Don't mean to give you a curveball, but you're very good. I've watched you along the way, Nick Lundberg. You did great work when you were at Michigan State for their newspaper and for other newspapers and the radio and all of that. And I'm so proud of you. Couldn't be more proud of you. I've known you for a long time.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering, I wrote to somebody the other day. I don't like this Jeremy Fears Jr. because he seems to be such a dirty player. Now, look, there could be 100 dirty players, but his is so, you know, for me not following it that closely, when he does that little back kick in the groin, I mean, it couldn't be any more obvious. So the other guys are being dirty, doing it in different ways, but that's what he does. But it hurts my heart to see a man who I love tremendously, and that would be Tom Izzo. I always have, I always will. But it hurts me in my heart to see how Tom seems to have to defend Fears. Any thoughts on that?
I think that's exactly what he does. And bias aside, for me personally, Tom Izzo has called out Jeremy Fears in the past. There were a couple games, you know, in January where this was kind of the topic of, you know, conversation. These kind of leg kicks and these dirty plays. And he called that out earlier in the season. And he obviously had that, you know, that scene at Michigan on Sunday. And Tom Izzo kind of, you know, was reluctant to comment on that. And I think that at the end of the day, Fears needs to realize that he needs to cut that stuff out. And there's not to say that, you know, other players on, you know, for other Big Ten teams commit, you know, like you said, dirty plays. But that they do it more in the basketball way rather than Fears was kind of just
such an obvious way.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that at the end of the day, Fears really needs to cut that out. But Tom Izzo has called him out in this past year, in the past couple months. And I think still defending his player is important because Fears is obviously a huge part of the team. And he's still, I've talked to Fears before. He seems like a good person. And, you know, it doesn't seem like there's anything malicious about him. But it really doesn't look good, you know, when you see these clips of him throwing his leg out. And it's something that really, really needs to be addressed.
You have a clock in front of you, so you can see our out is 57:50. But can you tell me what we can look forward to with your Big Ten tournament pre-show coming up this Friday night at 7 before the MSU game?
We will have Lansing State Journal reporter Graham Couch to preview the Michigan State game at 9 p.m., and me and Justin Valentine will bring other sports as well, but we will also recap the first Michigan game, which will be played, I believe, at 11 in the morning. So a lot of good content coming this Friday night.
How do you think all this is going to shake out? We're going to see Michigan and Michigan State doing well from what I can see.
I hope they both make a run, and I really think both of them are capable of making it to the Final Four.
Are you enjoying your duties here at WJR, Nick?
I couldn't be more happier, Paul.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I can't speak on behalf of management, but I can tell you we couldn't be more happier with you. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly what Ann Thomas would say, too. Keep up the good work, Nicky.
Thank you.
Nick Lundberg, WJR digital sports reporter, MSU, proud MSU grad, and we're happy to have him on the team now officially. His first, I don't want to say real job, but his first real job out of college, and he's doing a great job. I hope you appreciate that too. And Nick will be hosting the Big Ten Tournament pre-show with Justin Valentine from our WJR web department coming up this Friday night at 7 right here on WJR. Well, I don't know what it's doing in your neck of the woods, but it's raining like crazy here. We used to say it was raining like cats and dogs, and I don't even remember why we used to say that, Mike Parsons. Do you remember why we used to say it's raining cats and dogs?
If I remember in one of those fun fact emails that, I don't know, back in the day, there's be like people's roofs would cave in when they were made of straw and cats and dogs would fall in. But I don't know what the cats and dogs were doing on the roof in the first place.
Were the cats and dogs doing on the roof?
I don't know.
I don't know about that either.
It sounds dangerous.
It does. I gave an explanation once, but I certainly can't remember.
I know, and I can't remember the explanation either.
Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason, running all the controls, and in this case, teaching Abby Pelkey, recent University of Michigan grad, how to run all the controls, and Rich Luzinski with our WJR Traffic and Weather First, doing a nice job. We're all in this together. Relentless positive radio for you while you're on your way to making each and every day count, because you know each day is a gift. What we don't know is how much QTR we have, quality time remaining, so make the most of each day. Just changing it from I have to do this or I have to do that to I get to do this or I get to do that has made a difference. And being grateful, adding gratefulness to your life, and understanding how many things we all have to be grateful for rather than focusing on the negatives. It changes our lives in a very big way to focus, to accentuate the positive. We heard that somewhere before, didn't we? We've got great thanks for you choosing to be a part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio, which happens when you listen to WJR, whether you're getting your daily dose of Dietz, All Talk with Kevin Dietz, before us or right after us, JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani, into Mitch Album and Sports Wrap and all the other great programming 24 hours a day, starting your morning off with JR Mornings. That's for sure. That's a great way to get to going. Meanwhile, we got a lot going on. We've got some nice guests coming up. We are streaming live Facebook, YouTube pages, live video streaming. I do hope that you'll get the free WJR app and you can follow us along. You can stream us. You can also do the podcast if you can't be here noon to two like we are Monday through Friday. All right, let me look at some of the ideas that Mike has passed along. Well, we know at least three ships have come under attack. It's probably more than that now. Very nerve-wracking to think we're going to escort ships through the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah.
Because they're sitting ducks there, rather literally. What happened with the Consumer Price Index? Did they come out with anything? I know they were about to or supposed to.
You know, that's a good question. I thought that would have been bigger news. So,
Well, it must have been good news if the news media is not covering it. We'll see.
Let's see.
There was a story here that indicated to me. Well, I can't find it.
February inflation was unchanged, so it sounds like it was just no good news, no great news, just news.
And no bad news.
Yeah.
Germany, Japan to unblock oil reserves as G7 stands ready to act. There are like 23 or 32 countries who are throwing in, basically, to support President Trump and his efforts. Everybody knows that Iran has got to be decimated and destroyed. Think how much better the world would be if we didn't have Iran and all of their sponsored terrorism. Anyway.
400 million barrels a day, the IEA is releasing. So.
All right. And the prices of oil went down. It plunged by the most it has in 4 years. But that's not a front page story. It's only front page when it goes up, never when it goes down for President Trump. And when it went up, it was still just hovering in the area of when Joe Biden was president. I'm just pointing it out, you know. Let's see what else. We know that our governor has been working out with our president. I don't mean they've been going to the gym.
They've been spotting each other on the bench press.
That's not exactly what I meant when I said working out. But, you know, he's doing what FEMA said they wouldn't do, giving us help for the ice storm. He's taking a crack at the Asian carp. That should give him plenty to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, China. These carp from China.
Well,
let's see what else.
You know, Nolan was right when he says that, Governor Whitmer knows how to work with President Trump. It's not the first time they've collaborated. Of course, they got the funding for Selfridge. And hopefully it's a model for other bipartisan working agreements.
Yeah. And when you remember when she got the Selfridge thing and she went over and she shook his hand, she might have even hugged him. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a hugger, so I always think people are hugging or should. She got crap from Democrats. And I say that anyone who gave her grief for getting along with the president and getting a Selfridge, they should be out. We should print their name and make sure nobody votes for them, because they clearly care more about the power of their party than the good things for the great state of Michigan. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not like Governor Whitmer has never been critical of President Trump, but she knows how to go about it. She criticizes the action. She doesn't criticize the people. So she's able to speak her mind while still being in the president's good graces and get things done together.
There's one thing that I suspect she regrets, and that is when she, you know, put
yeah.
a thing over her face when they were
right.
when they were taking photographs. If she thought she was hiding, it didn't work.
Phew, coast is clear. They'll never suspect a thing.
She got more attention for putting that yeah. folder in front of her face than if she would have just. It's like that couple. You know, the couple that was fooling around and shouldn't have been
oh,
when the
at the
kiss
Coldplay,
cam
yeah, the Coldplay concert.
Yeah, the Coldplay when the camera came on them, if they would have just stood there and right. acted normal, it wouldn't have been a story.
The value of playing it cool.
Yeah, just okay, just stay cool, don't yeah. react, smile, wave. It would have been nothing.
Right.
And as it turns out, at least two jobs were lost, if not more, mm-hmm. and I suspect some of them, somebody would argue their lives were ruined, which they should not have been. It's unfortunate if they were doing things they weren't supposed to do. You know, I used to say that when I would do something. I had a daily television show, mm-hmm. Both in Toledo and in New York. I don't know if New York was not daily. I think it was once a week. But whatever it was, I used to say before we went on the air, if you're here with somebody you shouldn't be, you're in trouble because we show the audience. The other thing I used
to... How many people would get up and leave?
No, I don't... Honestly, don't remember anyone ever getting up and leaving.
Yeah.
But I always said this line, too. You know, you can use the same lines. It's a different audience each time. I used to say, you people ask me how they can look as good as possible when the camera's on them. And I say, before the cameras start, I say, lick your lips. You should always lick your lips. And then I would always go, sir, your own lips. I used the same joke every time,
yeah.
and I got a laugh just like I got from you, Mike.
Yeah, that's good. Well, it's good because you told the audience before the taping, right? So it would be a secret.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll never forget when we went up to see Rush Limbaugh at his television show when I was working in Philadelphia. We took a bus from Philadelphia to New York for the Rush Limbaugh television show. He was so good to me. He was so nice to me. We knew each other on the phone, but we had never yet, at that point, this is years ago, had never yet met in person. He came out before his show, and he walked out into the middle of the stage and faced the audience and says, where's my friend Paul W.? Where's my friend Paul W. Smith? He knew what he was doing. And do you know what that did for me with my radio audience in Philadelphia?
The term is getting over. He got you over.
He got me over. He made me a superstar to my own audience, and I'll never forget that, and was forever thankful. We traded cigars, the whole deal, and a friendship was born, and I miss him every day. And I know I'm on at noon, and I wouldn't be if he were here, but that's okay. I'd rather he be here. And I also miss Paul Harvey, who it was also a pleasure and a privilege filling in for both of those guys. Anyway, I'm filling in for me right now, and I'm happy to be here. Along with the team, Mike Parsons, Abby Pelkey in for and with Danielle Mason, and Rich Luzinski. And we're especially glad you're here, too, because we do this Relentless Positive Radio for you. Stay with us. David Shepherdson covers transportation, autos, and aviation for Thomson Reuters. He was with our great Detroit News in the past. And we're happy to welcome him back to Focus with Paul W. Smith. David, I keep forgetting to ask this.
Sure.
Didn't we just used to refer to Reuters as Reuters?
Oh, it is still Reuters. Yeah, so 20 years ago, Reuters got bought by Thomson in Canada. So our parent company is Thomson Reuters. But you just call us Reuters. Although our emails say Thomson Reuters, it's annoying and people don't understand it.
Well, it's especially annoying because I've been calling it Thomson Reuters.
Okay.
So it's never That's been right. Thomson Reuters. And no. I wonder just who the heck is Thomson Reuters. But anyway, so it Thomson Reuters. But I think I'm going to go with you, David. Let's just call it Reuters. That's the iconic name, Reuters.
Love it. Exactly.
All right. Meanwhile, Are the TSA lines? I read somewhere they were not getting longer, or that maybe even getting shorter. But I don't know. What's the very latest?
So it's a mixed bag, right? So much like the remember back to last fall, we had the 43-day shutdown. We saw air traffic controllers calling out sick. Like today, TSA officers at different airports, right? So we know over the weekend, New Orleans and Houston Hobby had terrible lines all the way to the garage. I mean, we're talking 3-4 hours. And we're still seeing some sporadic places where there are higher absences. The TSA today said about 300 of the 50,000 officers have quit since this shutdown began. And this Friday is the first day in this shutdown they're going to get a zero pay paycheck. So they're going to look at that stub. And I do have concerns that this weekend, if you've got TSA folks who got to find childcare or whatever, could call in sick over the weekend. Because look, it's hard. I mean, these folks are making roughly $20 an hour, $42,000 a year before overtime. So they're not getting paid super well. And a lot of them are living paycheck to paycheck. And like many people, it's hard to go without your pay.
Of course it is. None of us would want to do that, nor would we or should we be expected to do that. And yep. Because the primary institutional media are filled with Democrats and backers of what the Democrats are doing, they won't say what it is. This DHS shutdown is because the Democrats won't open up the money that they should get and that they voted on in a bipartisan way in the past. But they've looked at this as a way to get the president in trouble because they haven't been able to figure it out by coming up with better ideas on their own. So they keep thinking, okay, we're going to cause the TSA to people are leaving. People won't come to work Friday. They get their first no paycheck whatsoever in the lines. And people are going to be mad at the president. So that's what we're doing. But folks, don't be mad at the president. Be mad at the Democrats for not going along with a bipartisan solution they had agreed to in the past. I'm sorry you're not hearing that from the lamestream media, but you're not. Meanwhile, since I have you here,
sir,
can I ask you a question that I just found to be fascinating, and you probably have an answer. And by the way, yep, spring break is coming, and yep, believe me, the DHS officials are very worried that there could be more TSA employees who are going to leave. They need to pay their bills. Nobody is saying to them, oh, you don't have to make your car payment. Oh, you don't have to make your apartment to rent. Oh, you don't have to pay for your mortgage because, well, what the heck? The Democrats won't give you your money. We understand. No, these men and women have to find other jobs. It's bad enough they had to have two jobs in the first place. But anyway, I got that off my chest. Here's the question. And I asked my producer about this. Mike Parsons, neither one of us had an answer. I thought it was unusual when I read, and you're going to help me understand this, this being David Shepherdson covering transportation, autos, and aviation for Reuters. Why would JetBlue ask the FAA to shut them down? Why couldn't JetBlue just say, we have a problem, we're going to have to shut down? Did they avoid some liability? Or, I mean, what was the point of them? I thought they asked the FAA to ground them.
They did. Yeah, they did. And this has happened. This doesn't happen that often. I'd say about twice a year. United had something happen about 6 months ago, you know, Southwest. They're all almost always the same thing, some sort of IT problem. And I don't, you know, and right, you're right. That's, as far as I know, there's no regulatory requirement, but I do think it's a good backstop to prevent any plane from going out. Now, you're right. I mean, they're the ones that control the planes. They have the dispatchers, the control, you know, the gate agents, the pilots, and so on. You would think you could just send an email to everybody saying, hey, no flights. And so, you know, maybe this is just a way of ensuring that nobody leaves. You know, a lot of times it's about, you know, maybe, it could be a weight and balance issue. Like the pilot, something's wrong with the computer system that you can't have assurance that the plane is good to go. Or, you know, so usually it's some weird technical issue because a lot of times the airlines will choose kind of late at night to do a reboot. So it does happen most times, not like the United one, it happens overnight. Where there are not many flights, it doesn't affect too many people. And this one with JetBlue, I think, happened around midnight. Maybe it was done at 2 a.m. roughly. So it didn't affect people too much. But you're right, it does freak people out. And again, it speaks to Americans. People are obsessed with aviation, obsessed with what happens on airplanes, right? Things that happen on an airplane would never make news anywhere else. But, you know, people love to fly. They love to read about it when things go wrong. And like my parents and other people, they love to freak out before they go on a plane, right? So I do think a lot of coverage is about people worrying about their flight or their spring break trip or whatever, which...
Well, there's a lot at play. I mean, it's difficult for some of us to leave the flying to the pilots. You know, we get on the plane, we don't turn left to go into the cockpit, we turn right to go to a seat, and we're completely without any power at all. And that's tough for... You know, it's like... I don't even like, although I do let Kim drive more than I've ever let anyone else drive, I really feel I need that control. But be that as it may, so that's a good explanation. And I understand the ground stop was lifted about 40 minutes after it was imposed. Brief system outage that had been resolved. It occurs to me, JetBlue, I mean, I've been around a long time, so it seems hard to believe. It seems like JetBlue just started, but they're over 25 years old now. And I might have been in New York. It was a little while longer than I was in New York, but they headquartered in New York City. The flagship terminal was at JFK. How are they doing overall? How is JetBlue? Is it considered a successful airline?
Well, no, I mean, they're struggling. They are definitely struggling. You know, there's been a lot of merger talks, right? There was a whole, you know, potential merger with Spirit, right? And you know, I think, you know, the problem is, the big three keep getting bigger and bigger, right? You know, American, Delta, and United. And it's hard. It's hard when you're smaller. I mean, look at Spirit. Spirit was just in bankruptcy again. And JetBlue, as you're right, is the only new successful airline in the last 25 years. But they've still got to figure out. They have a new partnership with United, right? You can earn miles on both. But it's still unclear. Could they merge with somebody? You know, what's in their future? But they're definitely having some financial issues for sure. They, unlike the other airlines, they have not been making profits, you know, for quite a number of quarters. I think like 8 or 9 quarters at this point.
So it seemingly, I mean, I don't know, but it doesn't seem like it would behoove one of those big three to buy them. They wouldn't need to, really, I guess.
Well, you got Gates. They're very strong in South Florida. They're very strong in New York and Boston. Like, so they have some attractive assets. So, you know, you could see a United potentially interested in buying them, you know, economies of scale, what have you.
Interesting. Well, I got to tell you, we deal with the folks from Delta a lot. In fact, we refer to them as the official airline of the Paul W. Smith Show and family. I even told the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, that when he was on not too long ago. I think that Ed Bastian's doing a great job at the top, a great job. And then we work with Nick DeMarco and Hussein and all these people that we work with are all good people. So we hope and we are happy to see that you refer to them as one of the top three. And I'd have to agree with you. They seem to do a great job and certainly a great airline for Detroit.
United are getting a lot of money. You know, they're adding flights, expanding. They're right now, those are the two guys really on top. American, very large, but it's having its share of struggles as well now as well.
So you broke off a little bit. You're saying United and Delta?
Both very profitable, adding flights. American is having some struggles. They're also large, but definitely Delta and United are right now sort of leading the industry in terms of profitability expansion.
Nice to have a guy back who used to be with us at the Detroit News, now with the famous, iconic Reuters, David Shepherdson, who covers transportation, autos, and aviation for Reuters. Thanks for being with us, David. We'll talk again and look forward to it.
Thanks, Paul W.
We continue in Focus as we approach 1:30. Glad you're with us Monday through Friday, noon to 2. And if you can't be here, you can always go back and podcast us at WJR.com. Be sure to have the free WJR app. And now, too, we have the Facebook and YouTube pages, live video streaming. Well, you're on your way to making each and every day count. Each day is a gift, and I do thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio as we try to deliver to you relentless positive radio. It's not always easy, but we do our best. One of the guys who helps us do our best is Todd Flood. Todd is a managing partner, founder of Flood Law, PLLC, and host of the award-winning Behind the Bench with Todd Flood show on WJR. Here to fill us in on a story that you might have been following probably more closely than me, Dale Warner, the husband of Dee Warner, found guilty of her murder. Todd, you're here to report on that and anything else that tickles your fancy. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Paul W. Always great hearing you.
Tell me about this. Tell me about this Tecumseh farmer.
So he strangled and murdered his wife and put his wife in a fertilizer tank. And the body, no one could find the body. We were hired, Flood Law was hired to do what is called a declaration of death case. And, you know, basically to show that she was not just missing, not on some, you know, island having cocktails. She was actually dead. We won. Subsequent to that, the prosecutor filed murder charges against Dale Warner, was in prison for the last 3 years. And during that time he was in prison, I will say my hat's off to law enforcement, the prosecutor's office. They found the body. They found the body in the barn in this fertilizer tank. And ultimately, I mean, that was just hard, you know, going through search warrants. And, you know, while you're trying to prosecute a no body case, it got a lot better when they actually found the body and she was in her pajamas and duct taped and strangled. It was just a horrific, horrific death.
Let me interrupt you because I'll forget to ask the question.
Yeah, sure.
That's pretty good legal work to find someone guilty of murder when there's no body. Isn't that the point? I mean, isn't that true? It's very difficult when there's no body?
Very difficult, very difficult. But they ultimately did find the body.
But he'd already been spending time in prison for murder.
No.
Oh, it wasn't for murder.
No. He was in jail, not being released on bond. While he was waiting trial, he was in jail because there was he couldn't reach the bond. There was, you know, one of the few cases you don't get a bond on, murder being one of them, treason and others, but murder. So he was awaiting trial. During the time he was awaiting trial, while he was sitting in jail, they found the body. Then they go to the jury, and it was a tough, you know, it was an interesting case. But ultimately, the jury did the right thing. The prosecution, if anyone wants a master class on direct examination and cross-examination and watching a Michigan State Trooper, my hat's off to Sergeant Detective Drurer from MSP because he was the guy that spent 40 hours a week on this case every week, maybe 60, 70 hours a week on this case for the last 3 years. He just did a really amazing job. And my hat's off to law enforcement and to Jackie Weiss and Dave McCready. They did great. And I will give my hat off to the defense attorney, Mary Chartier. She, you know, did a fine job herself. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the jury saw through all of it and convicted Dale. And he is going to have probably a minimum sentence of 25 years, probably more than that. His guidelines are, as we calculate them, are about 25 years. And he'll probably come out of prison in a box, realistically. I think he's in his late 50s.
But when they finally, unbelievable work to find Dee Warner the way they did, was that enough? Did they get some DNA off of her body to tie in her husband to so they know for sure it was Dale Warner who did it?
Well, it was on his barn. There were surveillance videos, and the jurors that saw the surveillance videos saw him taking the welding equipment from one barn to another to weld the tank shut. And there was a fingerprint on the tank of his. And there was, you know, a loader in the case where he moved the tank. So there was a lot of good evidence and not only direct evidence, but circumstantial evidence to show that he murdered her. It was proof beyond a reasonable doubt. I would say it was proof beyond a shadow of a doubt. But at the end of the day, they had to meet the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And it was pretty clear. I mean, it was very convincing. If you listen to the 14, 15 witnesses of how he treated his wife, how he abused his wife, how cantankerous. This is, you know, the motive, even though they don't have to prove motive, the motive was is that Dee was going to divorce him, and on that day he murdered her, and this was all about money, really about money, because Dee was running a business and the farm, and, you know, he, even though you don't have to prove money or motive, this was realistically the case and how it came to fruition.
What a shame. So what a shame.
Yeah. Sad case, but law enforcement did their job. It's a hard job. I told all of them, you know, to take a much needed vacation. And, you know, I know the family well, and this is therapeutic, cathartic to the extent that they can get some closure finally, right? They can move to the next chapter of mourning and grieving and get some peace for their mom and their sister.
And as I read this, what a story regarding Dee Warner's brother, Greg Hardy, who was immediately suspicious of Dale and led a 5-year campaign for his conviction. As he put it, I fought every day for 5 years. It was very difficult to get validation. It took nearly to the very end.
Greg was a champion for his sister. He really was. And, he was frustrated. He was tired. But he fought through everything. I think he went through a lot of issues trying to get justice for Dee, and posted billboards, paid out of his pocket, and did a campaign to get this. And, you know, when they hired me to get the declaration of death, to declare someone dead that they're not missing, he was an integral part of that piece of the puzzle, along with his family.
What were the billboards? What did the billboards say?
Justice for Dee. Justice for Dee Warner.
Keep it alive.
Right. Doing his thing. So, you know, my hat's off to law enforcement, and I pray for the family that they can get some peace. Now, we're going to file the wrongful death lawsuit against Dale to recoup whatever assets there are left to give to the kids.
Oh, we forget just how complicated these things are, because unfortunately, we're mostly exposed to them on television. I guess that's not unfortunate. I wouldn't want anyone to go through this in real life like they just did. But on television, they always get it done from the time the television show begins.
35 minutes at best, right?
Todd Flood, managing partner of Flood Law PLLC, the founder of Flood Law and host of Behind the Bench with Todd Flood right here on WJR. We always appreciate your expertise and your kind help, Todd. Thank you.
I appreciate you and everything you do, Paul W. Thank you.
We continue in focus on WJR at 1:42. Well, it was great catching up with David Shepherdson of Reuters, and I'm so glad that he mentioned as one of the top airlines. I think it is the top. Official sponsor of the Paul W. Smith Show and family. We fly Delta whenever we possibly can. And I think Ed Bastian doing a fabulous job at the top. And we locally work with Nick DeMarco and Hussein Berry. And we are fortunate to have Delta here as such a big hub in Detroit. It's just a great airline. And we're lucky to have it here. And I hope that the Democrats will come to the table and pass the funding of DHS and stop the long lines at TSA and give these hardworking men and women a paycheck, which they will miss in its entirety this Friday, which is just wrong. And it's all for political purposes and theater, trying to make you mad at the president, and because the lamestream media isn't going to tell you the truth, that this is because the Democrats won't go ahead with a bipartisan plan that was already approved a long time ago that they all went along with, and now they don't, because they can't come up with any great ideas on their own. So the best idea is to try to make the president look bad. They don't need to help him do that. He can look bad on his own, but they should tell the truth when there's good news out there, like the news that they ignored when oil prices plunged by the most they have in 4 years. You just know the other day when it went the other way, they were all over that front page news. So my job is to merely observe and to point it out. Anything else that we need to talk about before we turn over the reins as they used to say, though we have no reins, because that would mean we're being led by horses. Anything?
No, you took me by surprise with
well,
that.
Well, I mean, that's the old expression, turning over the reins of power.
Right.
But that's the only thing it can mean, right? That's what it means.
Yeah, I think it's more metaphorical, but yes.
Well, everything is metaphorical now.
Yes. WJR, the station with horsepower.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
The Blowtorch 760, 50,000 watts of power.
Yeah.
Coming to you from the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building, no matter where we're broadcasting from, and we're broadcasting on the road again tomorrow. Hey, what time is it? Oh, we got a few minutes here. Anything else on your mind? Otherwise, I'm going to check in with Ryan.
Yeah, what, you know what? Let's get to Ryan, because I know he's had a very eventful morning.
Yeah, I've told Ryan, I've told you time and time again, if you hit mute on your barnyard, I mean StreamYard, if you hit mute, you won't hear me bouncing back like that.
Me?
There he is.
Here I am.
Well, we are getting a bounce back, but be that as it may, I told you a hundred times, don't play with matches in the studio over there at Fox 2.
WDVD would like to.
You know, it's interesting because we were doing our show this morning at Fox 2, and the fire alarm went off.
Yeah.
And we have heard the fire alarm go off before, but within seconds, they shut it off, and you get the all clear. You know it's a false alarm. Well, we were just continuing on with the show, and then all of a sudden, we got the message, we're going to evacuate. Southfield fire comes, and we were right in the middle of the show, so we felt like that was pretty odd. I think the one thing about it that is, and thankfully, everybody was safe. We got the all clear. Everything was fine, but the one thing about that is unsettling is you never know anymore.
No.
You just have no idea. So when they said, let's evacuate, we're going to evacuate, you kind of sit there and you say, are we in the middle of something that you really see on the news sometimes? You have no idea.
Sure.
It was the unsettling part. But everything was fine within minutes. I think we were off the air for about 20 minutes, which was kind of wild.
Well, that was my question. What happened when you guys all walked out of the studio?
They immediately cut to Live Now, which is the Fox version of an all-digital newscast.
I see.
Is just a simple switch where if something happened or our stream is 24/7. On Fox Local, so they just took that Live Now stream.
Our old management, not our current management, with our old management long gone, we would have the fire alarm go off, and they would say, oh, don't worry about it. It's okay. Just stay on the air. Because we knew that they were going to sacrifice us, if they had to just make sure we stayed on the air. So we were never certain that there wasn't really a fire, but we never left. New management would not do that. They're much more humane, and I mean that sincerely, Steve Finitari and all the guys. Anyway, I really need to know, did Fire Marshal Bill show up?
Fire Marshal Bill? I don't know if I know Fire Marshal Bill.
Mike thought you would know.
Yeah.
That was Jim Carrey.
In Living Color.
I never watched In Living Color.
Okay.
Well, that's your next thing, Ryan.
Your assignment tonight is to go find Fire Marshal Bill, the character Jim Carrey played. Now, of course, if he was there, you wouldn't have recognized him because Jim Carrey's had so much face work done. He doesn't look like himself anymore.
Now you're talking to me here as our beautiful engineer, Ray Templin, is showing me a picture of Fireman Bill.
Fire Marshal
right
Bill.
Fire Marshal Bill. But Jim Carrey, we saw this a couple of days ago, this speech at one of the award shows. Actually, they were unsure if it was actually Jim Carrey or if he had a double because he looks so different.
He looks so different. Why would he do that?
I don't know.
Yes, he's got more money than he needs. He already said he has more money than he needs. That doesn't mean he should go spend it on completely changing the way he looks. But, people do what they do.
I can't figure it out, but nonetheless, Paul, if you've noticed today, I am at home doing the show. And so if something happens here, I'm going to get in on my bike and come down to your neck of the woods and hop on your StreamYard.
You can come on mine anytime, except I actually do a Comrex. I paid for this myself, by the way, Comrex. But I'm very impressed. You're telling me that Ray Templin actually is at your home running the show?
Ray, come on in here and say hello. Come on, Ray. Come on, Ray.
Don't be shy.
We've got 30 seconds left.
Hello.
I mean, where is he? I don't see him. Oh, there he is.
Okay, Ray. All right.
Okay, so Ray can come to your house to do the show. Can he come to my house to fix my computer? No. Okay, that's fine.
Right.
I know where I rank in this whole thing. Stand by for news and JR Afternoon with the one and only Ryan Ermani. This is a rare treat for you. You'll get to see Ryan's house if you tune in to the Facebook and YouTube pages with the live video streaming. You look very good. You look cleaned up.
I'm ready. I'm refreshed and ready.
We're on the road tomorrow. Join us from noon till 2. Regards, Paul W. Smith.